Parents should be free to have their children educated how and where they wish, sure. But should I have to pay for that choice? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we take on a controversy as old as the country itself. School choice. Should your tax dollars pay for kids to go just to the closest public school, or should they be able to move them to a school across town or a private school next door? Should we pay for them to go to a religious school? In advance of what is being called National School Choice Week, complete with a whistle-stop train tour coming to Union Station, we'll talk with proponents of greater flexibility with government education dollars and also with those concerned that this kind of choice leaves too many kids behind. What do you think? Tell us on Central Standard after the news. It's a controversial subject, though not necessarily a partisan one. It directly affects more Americans than just about any other debate in Washington and almost every state capital, but those Americans have no vote on it. It's because they aren't 18 yet. Good morning, Kansas City. This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. That discussion is about school choice. How much freedom should parents have to choose how and where their kids are educated? And what should you and I pay for through our taxes? Today we're talking with Lisa Graham Keegan. She's the former Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction and Outreach Director for the National School Choice Week, which is next week. Lisa, welcome to Central Standard.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
And here in the studio we have David Smith. He is Chief of Staff for the Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools. David, welcome to you.
Thank you, Brian. We
should mention that David is actually a member of KCUR's Community Advisory Board as well, for full disclosure. We'll be joined later by folks from a local teachers union, as well as some private school folks from the Kansas side. We hope also to be joined by you. You can join the conversation on the KCUR Facebook page or by email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Lisa, you're beginning a week that strongly tries to emphasize school choice. Bring us up to speed. When people talk about supporting school choice, they're talking about what?
They're just talking about any kinds of school choice, Brian. As you pointed out, this is a totally nonpartisan event with bipartisan support. So we talk about six different kinds of school choices parents have: public district schools, public magnet schools, public charter schools, private schools, online schools now, which is the new sort of big dog and fast grower out there, and then homeschooling. So National School Choice Week does not try to get its partners to agree on the tactic. Everybody has a different opinion about what kind of choices in what states. But we do emphasize, we come together to emphasize the importance of excellence in schooling and to get parents to recognize they have a lot of choices. And where we don't have excellent choices, then we demand those. It's just a great opportunity to advocate for a school that any parent would want to send their own child to have a broad range of excellence.
Not everyone is supportive of the concept of school choice, and we'll hear more about that as the program goes on. But in the presidential campaign last year, both candidates actually said that they support school choice, even though that meant different things to them. Their agendas were not identical. What sort of spectrum do you work with? What is the range of levels of support that you encounter in your work?
Well, it's everybody, and it's fascinating. So everybody from Democrats for Education Reform to the American Federation of Taxpayers. So we run the full gamut. We will be, in fact, in Kansas City on January 28th, where I will be speaking. Joe Trippi will be speaking. Joe is a Democrat strategist, runs a number of Democrat campaigns around the country. This is always true. You know, last year when we kicked off, James Carville kicked off for us in New Orleans at our big kickoff event, and we had Speaker Boehner as well. So the point is, as you say, the president is a big fan of public charter schools. Secretary Duncan has been very instrumental in making sure there were no caps on access to public charter schools around the country unnecessarily if there was demand for better schooling, so long as the schools were great. We work with a lot of public district schools on National School Choice Week. This year, the Houston ISD, Milwaukee Public Schools, And we love that. People coming together to simply say we are about excellence. We recognize we're in competitive environments now. And we embrace it.
Okay, so let me then ask, we have David Smith here. He's chief of staff for the Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools. David, I know you don't speak for every school district in America, but by and large, are public school districts supportive of school choice or are they opposed?
You know, I think for us, the point is not, it's not a question we necessarily answer. Our goal is excellent public schools. And I think that's what everybody wants. And for us, the focus is on how do we as a system come together and pool our resources and do the things necessary to create that excellence. That's our focus. Choice is fine. We've had a charter school in our district for a while, but the bottom line for us is excellent public schools for all of our students.
So in KCK, what forms would school choice take? What degree of freedom does a parent have if they want to see their child, their student go to a school other than the one that is around the corner from them?
Sure. Like I said, at one point we had a charter school that lasted for 2 or 3 years. Unfortunately, they weren't able to meet the things that they had said they would do in their charter, so that school went out of existence. We do have a magnet school for grades 8 through 12, Sumner Academy of Arts and Science, and Sumner just happens to be based on Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, The Washington Post, the best school in the four-state area. So we have an amazing high school in Sumner, as well as 4 comprehensive high schools. But primarily, our schools are neighborhood-based, but as you know our story, you know the growth that we've had as a district, you know that we get national recognition because we have been able to move student achievement, and our goal is to make sure that every parent has the ability to send their child to a quality school. That's for us, and it really does mean every child.
Okay, so hypothetical then. There's a parent who lives, let's say, somewhere around KU Medical Center, and they say that they think their child will get a better education at Shawnee Mission North High School, about 5 miles
away.
In a different school district. I want my kid to go there. Why should they be allowed to do that? Should they be allowed to have the tax dollars that were supposed to go to the Kansas City, Kansas school district go to Shawnee Mission? Why or why not?
Well, you know, in our system, schools and school districts are run by public boards of education. So I, as a taxpayer in my community, I vote for my representative, and then my representative makes decisions about how those resources are used. To say that money should go to some other district, some other elected representative that I have no voice in, I can see where people would struggle with that. But for us, it isn't. We in our community, we take our resources, we make decisions about how we use those, and we make our decisions about how we create that excellence. And we want to make sure that every parent has the option to send their kid to an excellent school, because that's what we all want.
Lisa Keegan, should the parent of that student who wants to send their child to a high school in a neighboring school district be allowed to do that? Should the tax dollars follow them?
Well, obviously, National School Choice Week, we would say yes. We would say the maximum number of options is great. That's obviously up to the public in Kansas City. So they're going to make that decision about whether they want to do that. I would simply make the point that in a school district, only about 17% of the public, a maximum, is immediately affected by having a school or a child or a grandchild or a niece or nephew in their local schools. Most of the people who support our public schools do not have kids immediately in those schools, and the whole state is really supporting public education. So our feeling is, regardless of the options available, we're sharing a goal here that all these options are excellent. When they are not, and we know that is the case for too many families, there has to be a choice, and so we always direct parents to things like greatschools.org. Find out the quality of the school around you. Take a look. That's a good place to start. Go to the school, visit, find out what you need to know about that school and how it pertains to your child, because this is all theoretical for us, and it's great for us to want things to be excellent. If they are not, and it's your child we're talking about, you know, an improvement plan isn't enough for you. 2 years can make the difference in a child's life academically, and it can affect them forever. So we're very urgent about this. I think it's great that everybody's got a responsibility for schools, wants their schools to be excellent. We think primarily parents have to be able to educate themselves and make these good choices.
Sure. David Smith?
Just a couple of points that I'd like to agree with that Dr. Keegan mentioned. One being that it is absolutely true that public schools are not only for the 17 to 20% of us that actually have our kids in them. We as a society, and we're different than the European countries that maybe we are most associated with, we decided that public schools would be created locally and that they'd be governed that way so that communities could create the kinds of schools for the advancement of that community. So they really benefit everybody, whether or not you have kids in them. The other point being the importance of actually, as a parent, going to the school, not relying on public perceptions, but actually spending time in the schools. I spend, obviously, a lot of time in schools and often bring people to our schools. And people are surprised because if you look at popular media, Stand and Deliver, movies like that, your perception of public schools might be different than when you actually went to them. So, you know, go check out the school that you want your child to attend.
Although if my student had the Stand and Deliver teacher, that'd be a pretty good situation, right?
I don't think you'd want your principal standing there with a baseball bat in the hallway.
I suppose that part's not right. So Lisa, let me ask you, though. Obviously, there's different kinds of school choice that we're talking about. Charter schools, for example, function mainly within school districts. What about situations where government accountability, where public tax dollar oversight might be more difficult or actually non-existent? What about situations like private schools or religious schools, or you mentioned homeschooling? Shouldn't the public have some say, some control over the educational situations that their tax dollars are supporting?
Well, the most control you have over your child is where you place her or him in school. So,
but I mean, not just my I'm sorry, but not just my child, but I mean, my the education of the children that I'm paying for as a taxpayer.
Okay, I'll keep going. So public charter schools, in Kansas, they might be governed only by public governing boards, local boards. That's not true in most states. 41 states have public charter schools. Many of them have a state board for public charter schools. Those schools are accountable by the same assessments and the same grading programs that any public school is in the district as well. In states that have programs, like tuition tax credits, for example, or scholarshiping programs into private schools, most of those policies also require a reporting out publicly for those students who are benefiting from public support. They require some sort of report by the private school. Where they don't, the onus is absolutely on the parent, and it's a lot deeper to go in and find out the quality of that school because there isn't sometimes a public requirement for grading, and I think that's very, very important that parents know exactly what the quality of their school is. So these are decisions, and at National School Choice, we don't come up with a set of tactics and say you have to do all of these. We simply say our partners are fighting for excellence in their sectors. These are all very different, and we want to promote the idea that parents need to understand pros and cons in different systems and, you know, as was just said, get to the school itself because that's what you have to know. You can't be guaranteed by your school's a charter or it's a district or it's a magnet. None of those things are going to tell you about excellence. You have to go yourself.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join the conversation. What do you think about school choice? If you're a parent, should you be free to send your kid wherever you want? And if you don't support that, a lot of public school teachers and officials don't, although most of them are probably working right now, why don't you support it? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, and we'll try to share your comments on the air. You are listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about school choice with Lisa Graham Keegan, the Outreach Director for National School Choice Week, which is next week, and David Smith, who is Chief of Staff for the Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools. David, there aren't any charter schools now operating in the KCK school district. Why not, and is that something that the school district would like to see change?
They're not because, as I told you, the one that we had wasn't able to perform. But honestly, for us, we function as a school district and really think of it as a system. The resources that we have at the central level are used to support, at the elementary level, 30 different schools. And for us, because we have 30 schools, there's some economies of scale that we're able to use in order to improve. And I know you know this, but let me just remind you, we're a district that's gone from low achievement from 11% proficiency in reading on the state test to almost 70% proficiency. And in math, it went from 3% to 68%. So we're a district that's made remarkable improvement. We did it as a system of schools. Having an individual school that was going in another direction would be a challenge because we wouldn't be able to provide the same level of support as we did for other schools. So that for us, the point is making sure that every school is a quality school, and we're much better able to do that with the system that we have.
Lisa, is there a situation where school choices can be too many, where too many choices create a difficulty in parents making a good decision about where to best educate their children?
Well, you know, from your lips to God's ears, that our problem would be that we have too many excellent options. So that's going to be great. We haven't encountered that yet, but I would simply say, first of all, congratulations to Kansas City and to the incredible work that's been done in the district.
Thank you.
To those families, and we certainly recognize and applaud all of it. And it's certainly been in the news, and it's been phenomenal. That changes the trajectory of lives. So our issue is we want for every system of schools to be on that same trajectory that Kansas City is modeling for the rest of the country. And so I will say, however, it doesn't ever hurt anybody's system to have more excellence around you. It just doesn't. And we've got lots of networks of public charter schools, not so much in Kansas. It hasn't been the policy in that state to take them on sort of whole scale. In our state of Arizona, 13% of our students are in public charter schools, and some of our public charter schools are on that same lovely U.S. News and World Report of excellent schools in America. We're very proud of them. We have some of our district schools on that list, and our magnet schools, and our private schools. So the point being, we're trying to create an ecosystem that just drives each other to be excellent. There will always be choices. There will always be private and public schools. Families with wealth can access private schools. In the country, public charter schools are the fastest growing sector of American education. And the point is to make sure those are excellent. And as was pointed out, when you had an example of a school that just couldn't make it, it got shut down. That's not fun. That's not easy. But that's the right thing to do if a school can't serve its students. So, you know, wherever excellence comes, we're going to embrace that and hope that parents educate themselves and make that good choice.
But Lisa, let me press you on this point a little bit. You're talking about excellence. Excellence might be in the eye of the beholder, and in certain situations, like in private schools or a religious school, who's to make that assessment? I mean, can you really have a state authority judging whether a particular religious school is doing its job if the mission of that school is different than what a public school district might lay out?
And you make an excellent point, and this is why parents need to be very well informed. No, not always. If you're paying your own private money and you're choosing a school that the public does not have accountability or responsibility for, you need to be very careful. You need to ask people who are in that school. You need to ask graduates of that school. You need to ask the principal, may I see your graduation rates? May I see your vision? May I see your success rates? What testing do you use, and do I get a copy of those tests? So it's harder. But I have to say, in all fairness, lots of states have been telling the public that their schools were doing just fine for years when that wasn't the case either. So nobody has a perfect record of accountability here.
Sure.
It really does fall on parents.
Is it your position that parents alone should be able to make the choice, that really any school should be able to receive vouchers or funding as long as that's what parents want?
No, we don't make that case at National School Choice Week. As I said, we don't advocate for any particular sector. We recognize all of them. We support the work that all of them do, and we don't take a particular position about how a state wants to constitute its choices. We simply say we recognize the pluses of all of it, and if Kansas makes a determination that it's not comfortable as a state providing access to public school or private schools through some public mechanism, then they won't do that. But lots of states like Arizona do, and we celebrate that where it's creating excellence. We simply understand it's a public policy decision, and at the end of the day, we'd like to see as many excellent options as possible.
David?
And Brian, that's something I think I would support and agree with. I think as a district, we often collaborate with neighboring districts. We work with our Catholic schools that are in our community. I was in a meeting last night with a superintendent from McPherson, which is halfway across the state. We believe very strongly that working together, we can all get better, and that supporting each other and supporting the concept of public education, particularly, and I think Dr. Keegan would agree with this, one of the things that worries me is that sometimes we think about public schools as another commodity, something else that we pick or choose, rather than what it was for my family and for this country, a place where we all rolled up our sleeves and got to work. We have public schools, again, we're not controlled by a national authority as in some other countries. Public schools are local institutions, and our history has been one of rolling up our sleeves, getting involved, working to make those schools work. In some communities, the teacher used to be housed in that community. And that's something we don't talk about a lot. We talk about schools as something you want a good school, you move to that community, or you choose that school. But if we're going to have public schools, which are probably our most public institution, we need to work together to make that happen.
Later in the show, we're going to be talking with some supporters of charter schools, particularly in Missouri, as well as with a representative of a local teachers union who may have a different take on some of these matters. But let's take some calls at 816-235-2888. Let's start with John in Overland Park. John, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
I'm actually a non-Catholic who sends my children to Catholic school, and I really like the sentiment that's going on here, you know, caveat emptor, buyer beware. The school I send my children to is K through 8 and excels in Kansas's reading science and math excellence, journey to excellence evaluation. And the public schools that my children would go to don't exceed those standards at near the same level. So I've made a choice to send my children there, and I've been really happy with it, and I've gotten excellence, but I pay for excellence, and I pay for excellence twice, one through my tax dollars and two through my tuition. So I think it would be appropriate for Kansans to consider a funding mechanism for private schools. I do think it brings about a better result.
And so, John, let me make sure I'm understanding you. Do you think you should not have to pay twice? Do you think the money that you are paying for public schools should be redirected through a voucher or whatever we might call it so that the Catholic school where you send your children gets that funding instead?
Absolutely, I do. I would advocate for that. In fact, my children are a little bit older now. I've actually been asked to sit on the board of the school. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, we do more educating with less money, not to knock the public schools. It's a real stand-up for the private schools and the excellence that the faculty and staff put into the education.
And as a non-Catholic, you aren't troubled by sending your tax dollars to a Catholic school for education that includes religious education?
I'm not troubled sending my tax dollars to any institution that meets or exceeds the educational standards set by the state of Kansas. I think, again, that choice drives people to excellence, meaning the choice that me as a public institution, my funding might go somewhere else if I don't meet the requirements, which many of the Kansas institutions do by and large. But, again, we're talking about excellence here, and meeting the minimum and driving to excellence is two different things.
John, thank you very much for the call. David Smith, you work for a public school district. Do you have a problem with that?
Well, I think the thing we need to remember, I have children in public schools. I benefit because four other people also pay to support the education of my child. So it isn't simply my tax dollars. My tax dollars alone wouldn't educate my child. I'm grateful that other people who don't have kids in public school also support public schools, and that is our system. So the fact, I also appreciate the fact that the public school that I send my child to is governed by a public entity. So there's a level of accountability there. I know, and I can have some voice in that. And that's, I think that's what I would support.
Let's talk to Pat in Overland Park. Pat, good morning.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I apologize. I just got out of the dentist office, so if I'm a little slurry, that's what it's about.
All right. But
my question or comment follows the previous caller in that I believe that parents who send their kids to parochial schools should have some sort of tax credit on their local tax bill because, as the previous caller said, that, you know, we did make a choice for excellence. We don't want to have an ignorant, you know, public school by any means. But, you know, there's got to be some sort of equity involved here that reduces the tax burden on the local taxpayer. Ironically, my son was raised K through university in Catholic schools and now teaches in the KCK system, which he loves, and he's very proud to work there because it's an excellent system. So I'm kind of twist and tween on this, but I think it's an excellent discussion you're having. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat, for the call. Before we let you go, Lisa Keegan, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about this whistle-stop tour that we're hearing about. One way you're observing School Choice Week is with a train ride across America. What's that all about?
Well, the whistle-stop tour is in the tradition of wonderful whistle-stop tours that moved across the country to advocate for social change. And so we are stopping in 14 different cities, including in Kansas City, on January 28th at 4:30 in the afternoon, I believe.
Topeka earlier that morning as well, right?
Yes, that's right, in Topeka at 11:30, and I have the privilege of being at both of those. I'm really looking forward to it and to continuing this conversation. Those stops include an incredible number of political odd bedfellows, I'll say. Well, we continue on to Milwaukee. That will have both Governor Walker and Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee, who just ran against each other in Wisconsin, as you'll remember. They're both appearing at the School Choice Week event in Milwaukee. So we really look forward to it. Go to schoolchoiceweek.com and find out about it.
There you go. That's Lisa Graham Keegan. She's the former Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. She's also Outreach Director for National School Choice Week. Lisa, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
The privilege. Thank you.
And David Smith has been here. He's Chief of Staff of the Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools. David, always good to see you.
Good to see you, Brian. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll continue this conversation about school choice in Missouri and Kansas and around the nation. We hope you'll join that conversation. Should your tax dollars be sent to whatever school your neighbor's kids will best learn in? If that's really true, call us, 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. Today we're talking about the school choice debate, Missouri, Kansas, and nationwide. Should parents have the right to send their children wherever they want, and should the tax dollars follow them? We're talking in this half hour with some new representatives of different perspectives on this issue. Douglas Thaman is Executive Director of the Missouri Public Charter School Association. He's joining us by phone from St. Louis. Dr. Thaman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Andrea Flinders is president of the Kansas City Federation of Teachers and School-Related Personnel, AFT Local 691. Andrea, great to see you.
Good morning.
And Sarah Berger is executive director of the Insight School of Kansas and Lawrence Virtual High School, which we'll hear more about. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
So if you want to be part of the conversation, you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or give us a call at 816-235-2888. Andrea, I know you were listening to some of the conversation in the last half hour. You represent a teachers union. In the past, teachers unions not always fans of some of these school choice proposals. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's really fair to say. I think, you know, when you look at first, it started with the charter school movement. It's interesting because actually American Federation of Teachers, their president, Al Shanker, was the one who came up with the idea of charter schools. But in his mind, what he wanted was he wanted a place for those kids who were dropping out of school, who were the neediest ones, the ones that were not succeeding in schools. And he pushed real hard for those kinds of schools. But what has happened is then big business got involved and you had your, you know, for-profit corporations coming in. And that's when our attitude towards charter schools started to change.
But we heard a lot of talk in the last half hour about excellence. I mean, isn't the goal to teach students as excellently as possible, regardless of who's involved or what big business or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what is getting lost in this whole discussion is that whether it's a charter school or a private school, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a successful school. And, you know, when you talk about choice for parents, what's missing from that conversation is informed choice, is that parents, do they really know what schools are doing the best job in educating their child?
Doug Thaman, you represent public charter schools in the state of Missouri. What is the thinking behind charter schools? Why is that a preferable or at least one legitimate way to educate children with public funds?
Well, I think Andrea hit a piece of that very well, that the premise behind charter schools is the opportunity for families to have public choice, to have options, and they do need to be informed choices. And we work to make sure that that happens. But we believe that families need to be able to select the public school that they believe will best meet the needs of their children and have the opportunity to send them there.
So we had a caller during the break who couldn't stay on the line because he was on his break as a public school teacher. And he just wanted to add, he said, that public schools serve all. This is Murray. He said public schools serve all the disabled, impoverished, disadvantaged. And when you choose to send your child out of the system, it degrades that ideal. Is that a fair criticism of the school choice movement and charter schools, Doug?
Well, I don't see that as a fair criticism. I think that's an uninformed criticism. The reality is that charter schools are part of the educational landscape in Missouri. They are part of the public school system. They are held to a higher standard, and there are performance contracts behind them to ensure that they are performing well. They're responsible to be compliant to all state and federal guidelines and to manage and be fiscally responsible with the public school dollars. So they are very much a part of the public school system. It's an alternate way of providing a high-quality education and providing that choice to families, but it's definitely still a part of the system.
In a moment here, we'll talk with Sarah Berger, who represents a particular kind of charter school in Kansas. But sticking in Missouri here for a second, Doug, how many charter schools are there in Missouri?
There are currently approximately 51 schools that are served in Missouri, and there are 26 of those in Kansas City.
Okay, and are the rest of them in the St. Louis area, or are they spread throughout the state?
The rest of them currently are in the St. Louis area, although recent changes in the state's charter school law will now allow for school boards in districts throughout the state to sponsor charter schools as an option, a part of their portfolio if they would like to do that. And also in unaccredited and provisionally accredited districts after 3 years.
Andrea, you've noted that the direction charter schools have taken isn't something that that public school teachers generally favor. Are there other forms of school choice other than charter schools that that teachers can come on board with? We said earlier that this is sort of a bipartisan issue that a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle are supporting. Do teachers have any objection to a parent being able to send their child to another school in the same district or to a school in the district next door?
Yeah, I think there's some problems with that also. And again, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about the charter schools here in Kansas City.
Sure.
Particularly because one of the things that's not recognized is that those charter schools, the playing field is not, it's not fair, it's not level. When they have a problem with a child, then with a serious problem, whether they're fighting or they're just having behavior problems, they put their child out. If their
test that's incorrect.
Because I've looked at the code of conduct for a lot of those charter schools, and if they're following the code of conduct, that's what happens. And as a teacher in this district, I know that lots of times those kids that were not succeeding in charter schools came back to the district because they came into my classroom. I think the other thing is a special ed, the ELL, the homeless population. We serve all children. And I don't think, you know, the charter schools will say, well, yes, we have a special ed population, but you're looking at kids with speech problems versus kids with extreme emotional disorders or autism, the more serious problems that children can have. And so part of this is what concerns me is that, you know, yes, parents need choice and parents need to be involved, but parents need to be involved at every school. And I think we struggle in Kansas City to get parent involvement. One of the things that's never talked about is the culture of poverty. You know, so many of our children come from homes where they don't have good health care. They don't have a good diet. They don't have the support they always need. You know, there's crime in their neighborhood. There's drugs. They're dealing with a lot of issues. And those come into our classroom. And what happens is that the parents that are actively involved in their child, then they think, well, I want to get my child out of that situation. I want my child in a better situation. And I understand that as a parent. That's a good thing. But what we really need to do is how do we solve the problems of poverty? How do we deal with getting the resources our kids need in these areas, whether it's better health care, whether it's a good balanced diet, you know, those kinds of things.
Brian, I think these are interesting points that Ms. Flinders raises, and actually these AFT, they tend to be the talking points without facts that come forward. The reality is that the charter schools in Kansas City serve a high percentage of special education students and are held to IDEA and the same special education requirements as any school in the state, and they are serving students with anything from moderate to very severe disabilities. The other piece that Ms. Flinders touched on was that her perception or assertion that charter schools put students out when they are making poor behavioral choices. For every one of those situations that she's yet to come up with a concrete example, we see as many students coming into the charter schools who have been counseled out from their local district school. So I think the point is not tit for tat on these things. The point is that we are all public schools, and we should all be working together and collaborating for the best interest of children.
Doug, we won't leave charter schools here completely, but I guess I'm curious about your take on other pieces of the school choice movement. I mean, are you, as a charter school supporter, opposed to vouchers that could be used in, say, private schools?
You know, our goal is to really work with the charter schools to ensure that they are providing a high-quality educational option for families. And so we really stick very closely to working with the charter schools and representing the charter schools, as opposed to other educational reform options that are available or are in constant discussion.
Sure. Why aren't charter school teachers part of teachers' unions?
Yeah.
Charter school teachers have that option. If a charter school's staff would like to move forward with collective bargaining, there's nothing that indicates by law that they could not do that. Charter school teachers very often enjoy the site-based management and the ability to really be involved in how the school is governed and development of the culture of the school and the instructional practices that are used. Nothing that indicates that they should not be a part of collective bargaining if they so choose.
Andrea, sometimes that's the response when the AFT or other teachers' unions criticize charter schools is that that they're just complaining that they are not part of the teachers' union, that it's a way around collective bargaining.
Yeah, well, no, actually, Dave, he's actually right in that they can join and they can organize. But I think part of the issue there is that, and you know, maybe he has a point in that they have more conversation or they have more site control, but it's not. We do have charter schools that are unionized, and when teachers in a school want to become union, we're certainly there for them.
Let's talk with some of our listeners. In fact, the phone lines are completely full, so we appreciate all the calls. Be patient with us. If you want to email us, we'll take your comments that way too, centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's talk to Brent in Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for holding for us.
I guess my point is, you know, the point I would like to make is I would love to see public schools work. I have a daughter in kindergarten. I have to send her to private school because the public school system that I live in is not satisfactory for what my daughter, I believe, requires for an education. So I'm an atheist, but I send her to a religious school. I feel that I should get some sort of reimbursement since I am not using the facilities, the staff, any of that. And I don't really care about anything else but right now. I mean, she's going to school right now. If the public school system is going to be fixed, it's not going to be done right now when my daughter's going to school. She's got one shot at kindergarten, one shot at first grade, and so on. And I need it to be the right education now. I can't wait.
Right. It's not a philosophical issue for you. It's about your kid.
Yes. And, you know, philosophically, yes, I would love to send her to a public school. It would save me $5,500 a year that, frankly, I can't afford. But I can't afford to have my daughter repeat first grade, repeat second grade. And I'm tired. I'm sick and tired of everyone arguing about what's best for the system. I don't care about the system. I care about my daughter. And you, as educators, should care about my daughter, not about your funding, not about your union, none of that, because none of that seems to be working in the school district that I live in.
Great.
So,
Brent,
so
thank
really,
you.
It's a moot point.
We got a lot of calls, Brent, but I really appreciate you sharing your views. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's talk also with Tom in Piper, Kansas. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Excuse my cold. I had called, you know, with the original comment to the direction of with the voucher system, things like that. You know, we have the potential there to remove what is a social responsibility, paying our taxes to cover the cost of educating our children, and directing that to private institutions and things like that away from. And the previous caller makes me think, you know, not only is this social responsibility there, we all have personal responsibility in not only our, but our whole society's kids' educations. And if he wants to make a situation better, then he has to be active. And, you know, I'm a parent, I'm a former school teacher, and I put in the time and I put in the effort and I try every way I can to make Piper schools a better situation for not just my kids, but everybody's kids.
Tom, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks.
There's another option, of course, for school choice, another place that some parents choose to use those vouchers and let their children be educated. Sarah Berger is executive director of one of those, or actually two of those innovative options. She's at the Insight School of Kansas, as well as the Lawrence Virtual School. Sarah, I think a lot of our listeners need you to just tell us, what is the Insight School? What is the Lawrence Virtual School?
Absolutely. And I think it's important to recognize the difference. It's not a voucher. It is a public school, so it's receiving tax dollars. Both the programs are. And both of these are high schools. Lawrence Virtual High School serves grade 9 through 12, and Insight School of Kansas serves grade 7 through 12, actually, so it has a 7th and 8th grade component. And these are public schooling options that are part of a local school district. Lawrence resides, obviously, with the Lawrence School District. Insight School of Kansas with Spring Hill. And so we are held to the same standards in terms of being a public school and meeting the district's and the state's requirements. But parents have an option, if their student is residing in Kansas, to send their kids to an online public school for whatever reason it may be that they need an alternate form of education.
So online school. So does the student stays at home and accesses their education through the computer?
Correct. They stay at home. Some families choose to work together in small groups, so they do have that social interaction. But yes, the students do stay home and engage with a teacher in an online environment. We have services for special education students and the autistic spectrum. We have a lot of students that are advanced learners. It runs the gamut, and we're able to reach kiddos across the state of Kansas.
What about social interaction? What about the other things kids learn in school besides reading, writing, arithmetic?
Absolutely. And that's something that we take really seriously within our schools. One thing in particular, online clubs are big. Obviously, we're an online environment, but we take those online components and we bring them to face-to-face events. So we have active National Honor Society. We have active groups of student government, and they get together and do community service and events face-to-face. We do hold proms. We have graduation ceremonies. We make sure that the students are meeting face-to-face for that social interaction.
Andrea Flinders, I guess I'm curious, when you hear descriptions of online education now, you know, receiving the funding dollars that would otherwise be going to brick-and-mortar schools, what's your reaction?
You know, it's interesting. Kansas City has started to use some online learning for kids that aren't succeeding in the classroom, often bright kids, okay, but for whatever reason, it is definitely one avenue for children that may not a regular traditional setting might not work in.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like this, in a way, isn't really replacing sort of your traditional brick-and-mortar high school, but maybe the alternative school. It's for kids who have a particular reason not to be in a building.
Absolutely, and there are a lot of reasons why that may be. Like I said, the advanced learner who may be a professional sports player when they're on their way to the Olympics, or a student who needs is homeridden. They need to school from home, and they want the same opportunities that they would have had had they been healthy.
I heard you have a student who's in the London Ballet. Is that right?
Royal Ballet, correct.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Let's talk with Leslie in Independence. Leslie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great.
My two comments were, one, you know, since I've been learning about public school, I've found some disturbing information. A lot of public schools are funded according to local property tax, which in my mind means that people who live in lower income areas are automatically going to have less funding, less opportunity than people who live in higher income areas. And I think that's an inequality that doesn't get discussed often enough. I think a lot of people talk about, oh, well, it's not just money, but here we are discussing money in relation to public school. My second point is I think there needs to be more cooperative work between schools and parents. I think people need to bloom where they're planted. I don't think it's a good idea to send money here and there to send students to school. I think parents need to work with their child and work with their school in order to make the school what they need it to be or what they want it to be. That said, schools, and I have a kindergartner who, and this is my first kind of foray into public schools, I don't think schools communicate well enough with parents and families about what's happening in school. I work a full-time job at a grocery store, so I don't really have the time or the schedule to attend PTA events or even be a part of the PTA. But, you know, I still take the time to talk to my son, to educate my son. He's at a second grade reading level. We taught him to read at home because I was fortunate enough to get materials that would help him learn to read and enable me to teach him to read separate from the school. And I think that's kind of sad. Like, I don't understand why these kinds of things aren't coming from the school. Also, I mean, as far as online is concerned, I mean, there are plenty of resources online for parents to access and for schools to encourage parents to access. One site is ABC Ya. My son loves going to that website. It teaches all kinds of reading and math and social study skills and things like that. We also go to the Khan Academy. It's basically this online website that teaches math. It focuses primarily on math and sciences from basic addition and subtraction all the way up to calculus and statistics.
Right.
You know, so we as parents at home, for my son, we try to make sure he has all these opportunities, but I'm not getting a lot of feedback from the schools. And I don't know if it's because of funding issues. I know that teachers are overworked and they're not paid according to the value of their job. But I'm really concerned about the fact that I don't think schools communicate well with parents, and I don't think parents take enough responsibility for their children.
Leslie,
either.
Thank you so much for your call. Andrea Flinders, it sounds like a recurring theme that all of our guests have agreed with today, that parents have to be highly engaged with education. But Leslie makes a good point. That's hard for some parents to do.
It is. And I think schools I know in our district we now have the parent portal where parents can email teachers, they can check grades, they can do all those things. The problem in our district is only a third of our parents have internet access, which makes it difficult. Mm-hmm. But I think there's always a case for, you know, opening the lines of communication between schools and parents can't do anything but positive things for children.
You know, I'm curious, Sarah Berger, with the online school that you direct, the parallels between that experience and the experience of homeschooled kids, because they are at home. They're not in that broader social environment. We had a comment on Facebook from Nara, who said she homeschooled her kids for a while. Wish I could have done this the whole time. I'm not a Christian either. She's referring to the fact that many homeschoolers are religiously based. Homeschooling was amazing, she says, as my kids and I both learned so much and bonded in ways I never imagined could happen. Is that a fringe benefit of virtual learning?
I believe it is, and I really think that as we talk about school choice today, and we talk about the last two callers both mentioned the importance of being engaged in your child's education, the online and the virtual schools really help focus the parent because they are able to engage with their students in their home. It has the best of both worlds in terms of it is home-based. You are working with your students on what lessons they're doing and you know, what they're experiencing in their education. But at the same time, you have the support that you need from the teachers and experienced educators and the curriculum that's provided so that you're not out there floating on your own when you get to, for example, freshman year and you have to teach your child algebra. It may be a little bit harder than it was when you were starting off in first grade and teaching them how to read. Having that support from state-certified teachers is just a fantastic component of virtual education that I think people need to know about.
Doug Thaman from the Missouri Public Charter School Association. Are charter schools on the move in Missouri? Are we going to be seeing more of them?
I think you will see more of them. We have, we receive a lot of communication from interested groups that are really looking at unique, innovative models that they would like to consider bringing into the metropolitan areas or throughout the state. And I think you're going to see expansion of charter schools as families and districts throughout the state realize that this is really a great opportunity to bring voice back into the neighborhood. Public school choice.
That's Doug Thaman. He's executive director of the Missouri Public Charter School Association, joining us from St. Louis. We also were joined by Andrea Flinders, who's president of Local 691, the teachers union, the AFT teachers union, and Sarah Berger is executive director of the Insight School of Kansas and Lawrence Virtual High School. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
My apologies to Mark and Tish and Allison, whose calls we didn't get to, but you can all listen to this episode, subscribe to our podcast, even continue the conversation online. Go to kcur.org. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Kim Noble is our announcer. Stay tuned for Up to Date with Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard.